Radio. This is your host. Radio. That's them. I don't know. Now I'm on, I think. Sorry about that. This is Mark Brunetti from the Idiot Magazine and Piscataway House Publications. Taking over for Bud Smith this week on his Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to play some music for you for the first 20 minutes or so. Then we're going to interview some poets, writers, and artists for the last hour and a half. And I'll talk a little bit about some of the things that I do. But here's some songs first.
Hey, cut out that Chicago shit. Trailer for sale or rent. Rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pet. Ain't got no cigarettes. I've got a 12-hour reservation room. Yes, an 8x12 for this room. A man of means by no means. Third box car, midnight train, destination, Vanderbilt. Worn out shooting shoes, I don't pay union dues. Smoking old stories I found, short but not too big around. Man of means done.
Thank you. that I hate hell. Oh, my goodness.
I had a dream last night. Does it look too bad?
Live or die, we lonely night. And so I sit here at this bar. I'm not a hero, I'm not a movie star. I've got my beer, I've got my stories to tell, but they won't tell you what it's like in hell. Red flowers bursting down below us. Those people didn't even know us. We didn't know if we would live or die. We didn't know if it was wrong or right. We didn't know if we would live or die. I bomb Korea every night.
All right. This is Mark Brunetti on Blog Talk Radio, the unknown show, usually hosted by Bud Smith. I've taken over this week for him, and you might have heard me on the show before. I was on about a month or two ago, talking about what I do. But just to refresh you, my name is Mark Brunetti, and I'm the publisher for the Idiom Magazine and Scatterway House Publications. The Idiom Magazine is a small little lit mag that I've made, and it's a free lit mag. Some people might call it a zine, but I beg to differ that zines hardly make it past the first few issues, and they slowly lose funding and can't exist. But right now, we just came out with Volume 9, Issue 1. So we're just about to make that 10-year mark, which is pretty exciting. So this is my first time doing this blog talk radio, so we're going to make sure I'm getting everything right. There we go. But today I'm going to have a bunch of guests on the show, a lot of people that have been involved with the Idiom and things like that, different writers for it. We have the artist who did the cover for this issue. She's going to be on with her husband, Damon, Jen Mustachio. And, the cover that she did for this issue, I just came back from a literary festival out in Frostburg, Maryland. And her cover is a very interactive cover where she has a kind of, you can cut out the different pictures on it and put them together into a scene. I'm going to put together a little video to kind of show you what I mean, but I don't know. If you follow our website and our blog, you'll be able to see the cover and what it looks like, but it's pretty cool. So we got different poets in this issue. We have Josh Ballard. He's going to come on the show later on and tell us a little bit about his projects that are coming up. And, some of the books that we're releasing for through Piscataway House Publications. We have an upcoming dual book. A dual book is where we feature two poets in one book, and we're going to have Ink on at 8:30, and then Keith Baird going at 9:30, and they'll each read a few selections from it. So, it should be pretty good. Oh, I just see that Ink called up, so he's in and ready to go. Nice. We'll give him a few minutes to get together, though, and we'll get things started. I was going to read a piece from the current issue of the Idiom. It's not available yet, but by the end of the week, the new issue will be available online for you to read the whole piece. But so I'm going to read this one from it. It's by an Asian author from Canada. Nice little diversity there. Their name is Chai Ming Wan. So this piece is called Moving Sail. A whole box of human hearts, each still pulsing like a fresh-skinned toad. Two rows of shining skeletons of unknown gods, all with fingers longer than legs, skull-sized toes. Three sets of enchanted knives possessed by evil spirits need sharpening. Four giant alarm clocks guaranteed to wake the dead in a 5-mile radius. Five wine bottles filled with pickled souls as colorful as the rainbow over the Styx. How much for just the reddest heart? Nice little piece there. It's a 11-line poem, kind of about moving and things like that. Let's see what are people saying on here. All right, so we'll be going to Ink, and we'll be asking him. He's going to read some pieces from his new book out with Piscataway House, and we'll kind of see what he's up to. Let's see. Live. Ink, are you there?
Hello. I am here.
There he is.
Or mostly here.
Nice. Mostly there. Nice. How are you doing this fine evening?
Oh, beautifully, except for trying to hush two rat dogs up. So if you hear a lot of yipping a little later on, that's the little creatures pretending to be dogs.
Nice. Are you up in New York right now?
Yeah, I'm house sitting for a friend up in Cobble Hill in Brooklyn, which is an excellent place to go house sit for a friend because it has excellent bars.
Nice, nice. I'm just gonna go off the radio show. I'm gonna be in New York this weekend, so if you're still up there, maybe we'll hang out.
We don't have
plans to hang out with you right now. Nice, nice. So yeah, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself for the audience who does not know Ink?
How can they not know Ink? I keep myself hidden everywhere. I'm a Central New Jersey poet. I was born in Delaware and moved up here with my mom after she got divorced and like ran from the hubby. And I basically grew up in Jersey, loving it. I will defend Jersey from all attackers, and developed a love for writing and all things English in like late high school. I used to stuff crappy love poems into the lockers of girls.
Any particular pieces when you first started reading that where you were like, wow, this poetry stuff, it's all right. I like these words.
Well, you always like your own words. It's whether other people like them. And, you know, in high school, no one really does. A teacher in like high school who like called us all idiots the first day of class, like I fell in love with him because he was honest, or at least he seemed to be like the first honest teacher I ever encountered. And I was like, yeah, I don't know anything. Teach me. Awesome.
Nice. Was that like a creative writing teacher?
It was high school English, but just the basic.
Nice. So then after that, you started writing. When did you start doing readings, like, publicly?
Probably, like, mid-college years. I went to Middlesex County College, and then I went to Kane University. And I started doing, like, the Barnes & Noble readings. So I got into a crowd of, like, older writers, because, let's face it, mostly older writers go to Barnes & Noble readings. fell into that, started reading the stuff there, seriously working on the craft.
Nice, nice. Cool. So me and Ink have been working together through Piscataway House Publications. He's going to be coming out with a dual book with another publisher from us, Keith Baird. And Ink was going to read some pieces from it and perhaps maybe talk about them a little bit. So, I don't know. Which one? You want to start with Glow?
Sure. I'll mention that actually Glow has been retitled since. It's a sticky title, though. But anyway, it's now called At Both Ends, and it goes a little something like this. Guilt never questioned her glow. Which hand struck the match, flicked the lighter, held her slender body to inspiration's fire, didn't seem to matter. Beads of sweat she could not wipe from her own brow fueled his persistence. Eyes trained on her exposing core, stripping with minute hand self before the encroaching darkness. If I could just stop burning, she convinced herself. Maybe he could look away. Guilt never questioned his illuminated flutter. Off-white wings, formerly nuzzled by darkness, blushed, blanched by her sudden attention, stumbled through air and affection solely afforded atmosphere and horizon at twilight. Singed antenna smell rose faster than the second hand could grasp. If I could just look away, he convinced himself. Maybe she could stop burning. She didn't. He didn't. Instead, she blinked, grew brighter, continued consuming everything around her. Her. She drowned. She may not have known, but he was with her all the way down.
Nice, nice. And we actually did an in-depth kind of analysis and reading of that on the Indian Magazine's podcast. if you go to theidiotmag.com, I think that was the first podcast that we ever did was with Ink. And we discussed this poem in depth, definitely.
That's a fantastic
podcast.
It's weird. And everyone should listen to it.
All right, thank you.
Like the entire series.
It's strange hearing it, though, because when we did the podcast, we were looking at it on the page. And the way that you read it is how it's shown on the page visually. I mean, when you do that last part and you take your time between each word when you read it out loud, that's where each word is on its own little line there. And it's kind of funny how you give it that same effect. And even that part where you have the he says, she says, and you give like a long kind of pause there, I think that's where the stanzas break. And yeah, it's also how like you read it the way it's written.
Yeah, well, the breaks are it's a poem written in a very parallel structure, even though it's multiple parts each. And you have the conjecture first, and then the actual sort of inner monologue of each of the parts, the moth and the candle, and then you have the resolution.
Nice, nice. Do you feel that your poems are better appreciated when hearing you speak them or written down on the page, or do you feel that it's the same both ways? Or
I'd probably lean towards on the page just because I slam every so often and people hate my slam poetry. They do not throw up rhetoric scores.
Have you ever won a slam before?
Yeah, I've won a haiku slam and a couple other regular slams with really, really raunchy material. That's about it.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I remember we were there for that haiku slam. That was an amazing night. We were up in Hoboken. And
Suffering poetry slam, I think that is.
Yeah, yeah. And they had it all tournament style. We were like, damn, Ink's making it all the way to the end.
It hurt because I had to actually beat out the dude I'm doing the duel book with, Keith Baird. And
Do you actually have the haiku on hand that you won with that night?
Oh, I can find it.
Thanks.
Talk on.
Yeah, Ink is. I'll kind of talk while you're looking for that. But Ink also has another book out with Piscataway House Publications. It's not just him; it's six other poets, and it's strictly haiku. And it's been pretty good. It's a beautifully made book. Our publisher Keith Baird designed it, and Jay Portiza helped out. And it's Ink, our friend Dogmatic, who's also a painter. He gave us some haiku. Anthony,
and
the bass player from Accidental Seabirds, and Heidi. And it's a pretty good read if you're looking for those quick poems to get through.
And he also Dogmatic, I think.
Yeah,
and Dogmatic Answer gave us the cover on that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the piece is atop the casket, bended knees leave impressions only you can see.
Nice, nice. There are the 17 syllables there that won you that contest. How about any other hiker? You got them on hand there?
Definitely. Do you want the beer coup, or do you want the haiku from the 575 book?
Do a little bit of both. So what you got on
okay.
hand. We'll take some beer coup, too.
All right. One from the 575 book. Windowsill stuck plants digest sun through double panes. Do you miss the wind?
I'll just snap into the phone instead of applause.
This one is actually going to appear in the next Edison Literary Review. I think it's actually this edition coming out soon. Amusement park rides underwater. Waves take turns searching carriages.
Nice,
that goes out
nice.
To, of course, the side and the post-Sandy experience.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know when that's released, or you said it's already out? Do you know where people can get the Edison Literary Review? That's a great little magazine published out of North Jersey.
It is a fantastic literary magazine, and you can find it at edisonliteraryreview.org, I think.
Okay, yeah, that's the site for it. And I think To Be Continued Bookstore up in Metuchen usually holds some copies for it.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, it's a great bookstore too. Everyone should. Everyone in the northern central Jersey area should go frequent it. In the middle of a great town too.
Nice. Yeah, it's weird. There's all these little pockets of small towns in Jersey that you ride through, and you'll find some hidden bookstores and little things all around.
That's what I love about Jersey.
Living
in the city is so weird because everything is right here. Like, you don't have to walk, but, like, a few blocks for just about anything. But Jersey, you kind of have to venture, and I like the venturing. I like the effort you kind of have to put forth into finding these little places.
Yeah, I just came from a town this weekend, a festival, Frostburg, Maryland. It was kind of in the middle of nowhere on top of this mountain, but great little main street, had a great bookstore with a big poetry section. That great. It was just a good time.
Wait, a big poetry section?
Yeah, it had a pretty decent size. I mean, it was just kind of like one shelf, but they had about 100 books there. And they actually had a writing center right next door for the Frostburg University there. And there they had all the local poets and things like that. And, we might actually be setting up a reading to go out there one day. So definitely include you in that. Get a whole crew.
Excellent.
You want to read some more haiku, or you want some beer coups to go?
Sure, got some beer coup for you. This is at the tail end of the new book coming out, which is called Death Loves a Drinking Game. And it's opposite Keith Baird, When I Die, or Before I Die, I Want to Swim with Sharks, because When I Die, I Want to Swim with Sharks is much darker and not at all reflective.
Yeah.
Beer coup. Kissed a girl drinking PBR. Hated her taste in beer in my mouth. PBR, for anyone who doesn't know and is listening, is Pabst Blue Ribbon and a light lager, light ale, but horrible. The porcelain god sure that takes a lot of vows for things it didn't do. And my final beer coup, self-satisfaction. Giving yourself head, easy as a hard beer pour.
Nice. Those are pretty good. Do you have a title poem in that book for the Death Loves a Drinking Game?
I do not, actually. Okay. It's the first book I loosely wrapped poems around the theme for.
Right. So I kind of want to ask a question. How do you kind of put together a book? I recently had to put together a thesis for my MFA, and my teacher had me look really heavy at the order of the poems and which ones went in what order, and at what point of the book was the sad part, where was the happy part, did it end sad, did it end happy? And I don't know, he made me become really aware of that, and it was something that I had never really done before. I know you actually have a lot of chapbooks out. On your website, what is it, inksblot.com?
Yep.
Nice. How do you put your poems in order? And, like, how do you address that?
My first book, I think I spent, like, way too much time into thinking about the order of things and arranged them over and over and over again. I think at one time I just threw down a pile and just recollected them and saw if that worked. In the end, I don't think I really had any specific goal in mind. But as I progressed, some of them were just chronological. I figured that was random enough because, you know, poets just write poems at points in their lives. So if you just collect them like that, then they're all kind of out of order anyway, in terms of theme and tone and and then I had someone for my last collection, which was Miserable with Fire. I actually had an ex of mine put together the order for me. I was just like, I want this to not be too overbearing, and you know, not because it was, book seemed around depression, so I didn't want to send readers like off a cliff. Not that I have the power to do that, but you know, I wanted to make sure I wasn't directly responsible in any kind of way. So I said, "Here, you be responsible," and made her do it, and she did a decent job. And I
just
sort
of put a lot of power in her to put together the order of the book there.
Don't our lovers always have a little too much power anyway?
Yeah, it was weird. I think.
When I look at the like literary magazines, especially you know some of the really top-notch ones like you know the Heralded Poetry and Kenyon Review and all that, I'd like to think that there's at least two or three columns with a similar image or contrivance within the lines that they like to link together in terms of progression. And after that, then switch to something new for the same sort of two or three progressions. Because you must know, as publisher of the idiom, that you get 1,010 submissions, and there's got to be at least, you know, 20 about similar topics that you could easily link together in an issue.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, yeah, I could come out with a drinking issue. And just have everyone send me all their drinking poems and just have an issue based on that. I thought about doing themed issues earlier on. I even thought of having like a formed issue where people send me sonnets and villanelles and things. But I don't know. I guess I just kind of lost the drive for it and then just kept taking in whatever people were sending me. Yeah, it's kind of weird because when I had to put my poems in order for the thesis, I don't think I'd ever thought about that before because when I read books of poetry, I don't read them in order. Like, I don't look and go, okay, I'm reading the first page, now I'm reading the second one. I usually just open it up, and if I had read it before, I might read that poem again. But I'll just kind of flip through and look at things randomly. So the concept of, oh, this book is in a certain order for a specific reason never really dawned on me because I never thought about poetry in that way. Have you ever read a book where you were like, wow, this book was really put together well and in a really, really good order and things like that? I don't know if you've ever thought about that, but.
Yeah, because I'm actually the opposite. I can never read a book out of order, mainly because I never remember what I have read and haven't read because I have a horrible memory. so if I read linearly, at least I could keep track of page numbers. But I will notice certain themes and how things are placed within a linear manner. And there was actually a book you lent me, The Beauty of the Husband, I think.
You know, I was just thinking that. Yeah, the Ann Carson book.
Yeah, Ann Carson.
Yeah, that's a poetry book. Yeah, and it talks about her divorce situation with her ex-husband. And I was just going to say that's a book that I had to read in order. Because it's very abstract, but if you think of it as this story of this woman who is going through this relationship, then it makes a lot more sense when you read it. And I think that's one of the only books I could think of.
Also, Bob Hickok's Words for Empty and Words for Full. It's kind of doable both ways because he's very abstract in the way he presents the issue that he's talking about, but which is the West Virginia massacre that took place a few years ago. And the book's in three distinct sections, and the first is clearly, after you finish reading all the poems, the first is clearly before the shooting, the middle is during, and the third part is after. And it's if you read it linearly and you realize what you're reading, it's a fantastic statement. If you're reading it just willy-nilly, between poems, they're still fantastic poems, but they may not have the same effect as a
yeah, it's just you had read them in order and stuff.
Yeah.
Huh. Nice. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I know you're a very avid reader. you always post it on Facebook. You'll be like, oh, man, I just read the recent issue of Poetry Magazine, loved every bit of it. Anything that you're reading now that maybe you want to share with people, or any recent books that you read?
Ooh, yeah, actually, I just picked one up. Oh, there's a poet everyone should pick up in the world because she's phenomenal, and I don't think she has that great a readership yet. Michelle Davies, NICELLEDAVIS. She has two books out. One is called Circe, and recently released. It's called Becoming Judas. And both of them are wildly inventive. Circe is entirely from the point of view of Circe from Homer's Odyssey or Iliad. I'm horrible.
Oh, really?
yeah. And it's at times it's a cookbook. At times it's a diary. And the poems are all sorts of creative and concise and beautiful with language in every way you'd want them to be, as someone who loves words. I just picked up the other day because I was wandering around near Cozy Soup and Burger and didn't have anything to read. So I picked up Tracy K. Smith's Life on Mars, which is also phenomenal. Have you heard of it?
Right. Yeah, I've definitely seen that one. That's a popular one around here. Yeah, Life on Mars is a great book. Tracy K. Smith, I think she started as like a slam poet, right? And now she's a little more, she's got a couple books out that are amazing. And she's got some good stuff.
Yeah, that's what I kind of really like about her. You can see these poems being performed, but they are in no way as loose as slam poetry generally is. There are a lot of poets, slam poets, who have really tight poetry. One of whom I met last night, his name is Jason, up-and-coming dude at Louder Arts at the Bar 13. Phenomenal. There's not an unused word in his poems. But he gets up there and delivers them with as much drama as any, like, casual slam poet. And that's phenomenal. And Tracy K. Smith is, like, much the same.
Yeah. I actually read an amazing poem by her online. It was a sonnet, but actually it's a whole bunch of sonnets. It's 15 sonnets, and how she did it was the end line of one sonnet was the beginning line of the next sonnet, and she did that through the first 14. And then the 15th sonnet, she took all of those lines that she repeated and made those a sonnet for the 15th final one. And it was really an amazing structure and a whole narrative story that she kind of tells by using repetition and then the whole form, and it was really amazing. And damn, that took some time
and
work to work all that out. That bitch, what did she do?
God, that's amazing.
Yeah. When I read that, I was like, oh man, I'm not even gonna do any more sonnets. I'm done. I'm done with writing.
See, and that totally kills, like, I had an idea a while back that I, of course, never carried through on because it's way too much work, and, you know, she's actually bothering to do the work. It was a series of 14 sonnets, the first 13 of which would be 13, it was going to be called the Almost Sonnet series, and it would be 13-line poems, because a sonnet is 14 lines, and the first line from each sonnet would be, or the subsequent line.
Yeah, I guess the missing line would kind of be the first line of the next one.
Exactly.
Nice.
Or no, not the next one, the final one. They'd all create a new one.
Oh, the final one. Okay, nice. And you can even have it where, have an unfinished sonnet, and then almost the reader is going to want to fill in that last line themselves, and that could totally... You could make the poem very ambiguous at the end, and the reader can come up with the final line that turns it one way or turns it another way. It's almost like an interactive poem.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice. We'll do that one last question. It's about 8:53 now, and then I think up next we got Josh Ballard coming on. He's going to be calling out. But do you do a lot of form poetry?
I know that you do the haiku
and stuff, but...
Yeah, I have a great respect for haiku. Um, I really don't do form unless there's something I'm trying to prove with it. If something really needs to be a sonnet, I will make it a sonnet. If something really needs to be a villanelle, you know, same thing. But usually, nah, not so much.
Yeah, yeah. Nice, nice. So yeah, we'll play a little song in between people here, but thanks for coming on the show, Ink, and if I do this again in a few weeks, we'll definitely have you back and see what else you've been reading and things and all that.
Well, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. And I think Keith is going to bring the dual book down this week, and I'm going to get one final look at it as we do our final edits. But we're thinking a December release for it. And, you know, keep your eye out on theidiommag.com, and we'll be having a book release party with Ink and Keith's work in it. All right. Yeah, anything else?
No, that's it.
Oh, all right, nice. And,
the upcoming book then.
Oh, that's so nice. Are you going to be in New York this weekend?
Yeah, I'm here for the 20th. I'm just drinking
nice,
and partying.
Nice.
At the Flushing Library, there's Bloodfest on Saturday. It's going to be an awesome thing. It has, like, local bands doing horror themed songs, and there's anthropologist I know doing horror stories, and you know, all sorts of fun stuff. So if you're in the city, come by. Fun time.
Yeah, nice, definitely. All right, well, good talking with you, and yeah, I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. All right. Nice little interview there with Ink. I'll keep things going here. I think I'm going to read another piece from the idiom and see how long this goes. We should have Josh Ballard calling in any minute now. Talk to him about some of his upcoming projects. So once again, I'm Mark Brunetti, publisher of the Idiom Magazine, and I'm going to read something from the recent issue, Volume 9, Issue 1. This one's called White Crow. And it is by Tyler Bigney. I've never met it before, so. Hold up all winter talking shit on the internet about rap albums. I haven't heard and watching the same four-minute clip of the Japanese girl getting fingered on the train, convinced if we met on a snowy street in Tokyo or Halifax, Nova Scotia, we'd share a moment. Two strangers plucked out of a bad scene from a made-for-television movie. I was looking at the other parts of her, the mole above her navel, the scar on the inside of her thigh, and wondering how it got there, where the train was going, it would ever stop, and if I had the means to travel through time, would I save her from getting on that train or do nothing at all? I joined Asian dating websites and clicked through profiles for someone resembling her, sending messages as if I was some sort of writer, world traveler wannabe. I gave up meals surviving on trail mix, Jack Daniels with a squirt of honey and ginger ale. I waited for ghosts or a white crow to arrive outside my window and stare me down until one of us blinked. But there were only chickadees and the odd blue jay eating what seeds I put out for them. It was February when I trudged 6 miles to where my grandmother was buried and laid beside her in the snow, looking up, watching the dark grow darker, not thinking anything but letting the wind push all the suffering from my head. The snow fell, hushing the world, and later I woke to the sound of a car passing, the engine too loud. I shambled down the dirt road that led to the paved road, followed by a murder of white crows, not to take me, but to make sure I found my way home, knowing halfway across the world, the sun was starting to rise in Japan, and by the time I made coffee and sat down, one of those girls will have hopefully replied. Thanks. So that was a piece by Tyler Bigney in the recent issue of the Idiom. Nice little, gets a little ranty there at the end. But I like that. That one extra long sentence that really sums up the whole piece. It's pretty good. So up next, we got Josh Ballard calling in at about 9 o'clock.
will be coming on. I'm going to read one of my pieces from the current issue. I'm Mark Brunetti. And this is actually written because of a workshop that Josh Ballard had done at the Annex when we used to have readings there. And, oh, man, I just saw him chill out. Nice. So I'll read this piece. And it was inspired by Josh Ballard and his workshop that he did. So this is the Museum of the Past. You are allowed to talk to your 10-year-old self in this museum, encouraged to warn yourself about getting lost on the beaches of Wildwood and ruin the experience of never being found. How a telephone connects to the past, they never fully explain, but mention the speed of sound and light and dimensions, but only your dimension. You let yourself know that when your dad leaves your mother, it's only going to get a lot better. Not to be a cop like he was and join the marching band in high school, to learn how to cut class, make out with girls and smoke pot, make out with that guy just to see how it feels and run into the handicap sign to break the only bone ever broken in your life. Now you think that your 10-year-old self only did these things because you told him, that the Museum of the Past made your present, that maybe Back to the Future really does explain a lot about how to live, and that you should visit this museum every day to warn your yesterday self of what's happening right now. That was my piece, the Museum of the Past. Let's get some Josh Ballard on here now. Joshua Ballard.
Mark,
are you? Yes, you are there.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. There's a little delay between what we say, so we might kind of talk over each other a little bit, but we'll just go back and forth, and it'll be fine.
Okay, that sounds good.
Nice. So how have you been?
I'm doing okay, man. So am I workshopping that piece that you just read?
Are you workshopping it?
Yeah.
If you want to do a little critique, that's fine. But let's talk about things that you're doing right now.
Okay, that sounds good. What do you want to start with?
Let's start with Artists for Change. I mean, I definitely want to get some of that info out there. How about if you tell us what it is and what your plans are for the future with it?
All right. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be talking about this. It's hopefully a cause that a lot of people can get on board with, and hopefully we can make a lot of really good positive change. Artists for Change is a brain baby of mine, which started out when I met a guy from Albuquerque who was doing this thing called 100,000 Poets for Change, which is this global event that basically takes art and uses it to affect some sort of local change in a community. And all these, like a couple thousand local communities around the world do it at the same time. And effectively what that creates is a global change. And he was telling me about this, and it was the first year of its inception, and it really inspired me to come back to New Jersey and start 100,000 posts per change of my own.
It happens every October, right?
It's the last Saturday in September.
Oh, okay. Nice.
100,000 posts per change. So, yeah. You know, I was formulating the ideas and coming up with like the schedule of performers and artists and poets and musicians, and I started to realize that how many people that even I just knew that were willing to sacrifice their time, to sacrifice some of the merchandise that they worked hard to create, and a lot of their energy and their goodwill to make something positive happen in the community. And, you know, a big part of it is that they want to perform for as many people as possible. And that in itself has changed when you have artists who perform for people for free, and then you have them giving up other things. So from 100,000 Poets for Change, I kind of had this vision of this collective of people in New Jersey that would come together to, effectively create change as much as possible through shows and benefits, concerts and auctions and things like that. And I kind of sent an email out and 2012 to all the people that participated and welcomed them to this movement that was growing. And it sat on the back burner for a year until I was getting ready to do this year's 100,000 Poets for Change. And my friend, dear friend of mine, Justin Roberts, I asked him to be the art curator for this 100,000 Poets. And I told him about Artists for Change. And we immediately realized how much potential the movement had with the two of us working together. And we started, you know, further planning the 100,000 Poets for Change event. And then it just kind of exploded and we started planning more events. And now we have like a corporate sponsor. And we have a couple other cool things that are coming up. And we have some people that are working on the staff, such as your host for tonight, Mark Brunetti, and some other people. And it's really growing faster than I anticipated, but I think it's happening at the exact rate that it's supposed to. You know, I think it's happening the right way.
Yeah, I know you had mentioned that the last event, maybe a pumpkin carving type event. Is that one going to be going on, or?
So, Pumpkins for Change. We were so excited about that. We got to go ahead from the Farmers Against Hunger, which is the New Jersey Coalition Against Hunger, where farms come together and donate extra surplus stock. But we couldn't get a farm that didn't have their pumpkins allocated yet. We even had Asbury Park that was getting on board and making it a city event so they could waive all the insurance and all that stuff. And it just so happened that we couldn't get enough pumpkins together for what we wanted to do. So we put it on the back burner, and we're definitely doing it in 2014. It's already
nice.
It's already most of the way planned out, you know. And this time we're so far in advance that everyone can plan accordingly for it.
Yeah, nice. And also put a plug in for this on Thursday night. You have you do a little thing. How about we talk about that for a little bit?
Sound Waves, yeah. Thursday nights at 9 o'clock. Myself and another friend, Sean Marshall, we run a show called Sound Waves at the Ezra Park Yacht Club, and it's free. We showcase local talent. We usually have 2 to 3 musical acts. Sometimes they're solo performers, sometimes bands, and every once in a while we throw a really good spoken word poet up on stage to kind of switch up the game and provide something different. So like this week we have Little Big Toe, which is Jimmy James from Accidental Seabirds' solo endeavor. We also have Youth League and the Spies, and also Frank Lombardi just jumped on last week. So we have a pretty full show this week coming up. And October 31st, we have a huge like Halloween costume show with a bunch of really cool bands. And the current Asbury Park Poet Laureate, Josh Dogmatic Matson, is doing some really crazy stuff as the anchor act in the middle. That's going to be really cool.
Nice.
Let's have Dark City.
And let me tell you, too, me and my girlfriend are going to have both adorable costumes at that show.
You're going to have what?
We are going to have the most adorable costumes at that show.
I hope so. I hope you're so disgustingly cute that people throw up.
She was so happy to see me, but then I realized that my costumes had come in the mail. And we put them on, and she's just like, "Do I really have to wear this in public?" I'm like, "Absolutely." So, and Soundwaves is on the boardwalk in Asbury Park, right?
Yeah, it's right on the boardwalk by Langosta Lounge, second in Ocean.
Nice. And what time does it run?
It's 9 p.m. every Thursday.
Nice. So, yeah, people can go check that out. How about Josh Ballard, the poet? I know, last year, Pacato House Publications, we published your book, I Keep Going, and it's been a huge hit success. But what's on the back burner for Josh Ballard and your writing and what you've been doing?
Well, it's been kind of a toned-down year after a couple years of touring. I've been really fortunate, and I got to start off this past summer coaching the Loser Slam Poetry Slam team and then end up being a part of the team after everything was said and done. And, I've been writing and I've been kind of fine-tuning the technical aspects and the writing portion of the art form, and kind of just really taking it slow and honing my craft and concentrating less on the performance side of things and more on the actual writing, which is a good thing. And I find myself kind of ebbing and flowing between performance and writing. It kind of like each year it goes back and forth. And because I do perform as well, that's like a separate craft unto itself. And I'm constantly working on refining the craft, but I take each one year of each to kind of focus in and make that my priority this year. So that's what's been good on there. I'm looking forward to performing this year at Loser Slam and trying to make the national team and go to Oakland and San Francisco, which is a pretty sweet location.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Any word on where that might be going on or anything? Yeah, Loser Slam events? I know it's been on hold for a little bit.
Yeah, well, we've been in talks with several venues, and we recently, Nicole Homer, the Slam Master of Loser Slam, and Chad Anderson, the founder, they've been talking to Two River Theaters in Red Bank, and we recently came to the decision to have the event there. It's going to be every Wednesday night. I think we're starting in 2 weeks. Probably three to be safe. I didn't get the official word from Nicole, but they said we're good to go whenever we want to start, and I think we're just kind of locking in some features and getting that rolling, and we're going to start promoting that, I guess, right now.
Nice. And you can find them on Facebook. I don't think they have a website, right?
Yeah, you can find Loser Slam on Facebook, and you can go to the Two Rivers Theater website. It's right in Red Bank. It's an amazing, amazing theater, and we have access to one of their smaller rooms for a weekly show, and their large 100-seat black box theater for bigger events. So it's going to be I think it's a really good opportunity for a different kind of growth than we've been experiencing the past couple of years with moving around so much. And they guaranteed us a venue, so and they're donating the space to us, which is great because Loser Slam doesn't charge. It's a donation-based thing, so it's a really good opportunity, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Nice. So going back to Artists for Change, do you have any events coming up for that in the next few months or anything? Or I don't think you have a website yet, do you?
We don't have a website yet. We were just founded like 3.5 weeks ago, so we're supremely in the infancy of Artists for Change. And that's what I mean when I say we got like a corporate sponsor and we got all this stuff. It's happening fast, but we have tentatively scheduled for the second week in December an event that is kind of tentatively named Legos for Change. We're actually working on getting Lego to sponsor this event. Justin went to one of their regional offices, and I've been working on stuff online with their I think Sweden is where they're based. I'm pretty sure it's Sweden. To get
Legos
them to
are Swedish?
Event. They're Swedish. I didn't know that either. I thought they were like American, but they're Swedish.
Yeah.
Like all good things, they're Swedish. Like fish. Great.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
Stuff from Sweden. yeah, so we're hoping to get all the local intermediate schools involved. To have some sort of contest within the school, a writing-based competition where, like, a winner is selected and then representatives from all the area Monmouth County schools get to come to one of the local theaters, and we're going to have a huge Lego building contest where each of the winners is going to be mentored by a local artist and kind of work into building a huge Lego sculpture. And we're going to have some charities, the beneficiaries, and it's also going to be like a food, clothing, and toy drive to get in to the show so that, you know, it's going to be right around Christmas time so that some local families can benefit from that as well. So try to incorporate as much as possible into each event so that as many people can benefit as possible in an artistic way.
Yeah, that's awesome. Nice. So, yeah, I guess we'll be looking at some of the events. I guess they could look for Joshua Ballard on Facebook and
figure out what the existence is going on. Yeah, and we also have a Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/artistforchangeAFC. And we'll be posting stuff on there. And eventually when we get a website up, you know, we'll post links on there so that you can have a better idea of when things are happening. And we'll put events up on that page as well. So it's a good way to get in touch.
Am I following you? I'm going to look. I don't even know. I'm going to look for you. But, all right, well, cool, man. It was definitely good talking with you. And,
I'll see you probably Thursday night at the Little Big Crochet. Awesome. I hope to see everyone out there in Radio Land there as well.
Nice. I will talk to you later, then.
All right, Mark. Thanks.
All right. Bye. We'll hang up on him. Nice. All right, this is going great. This is a great podcast going on. All right, so that was just Joshua Ballard from Artists for Change. Definitely go check him out. He's doing lots of stuff there. And up next, we got Deborah Laveglia from the Barrett Arts Center. Let me hook her up here. Hello, Deborah.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. This is great what you're doing tonight.
Yeah, right? There's like a little delay here, but that's right. We'll just go back and forth with it. But, we're out to everybody about all of our events and stuff. So Deborah is the hostess for an art center up in New Jersey. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it for lots of people who are listening across the nation here? All about Barrett Art Center.
Oh, sure. We've been running for 30 years, actually more than that now. 1978, Edie Eustace founded the Poets Wednesday that runs out of the Barron Arts Center. And she had run it first on her own, and then Joe Weil came along and was helping her. And then I joined the three of them in, I think it's like 1992. And now I'm doing it on my own, so I guess I've been doing it for quite a while.
Nice.
And we have, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, as you know, because you've read for us, and hopefully you'll be reading for us again soon, we have a monthly program, and it runs the second Wednesday of every month. We've only missed one in all those years. We only closed once, and it was because of an ice storm a couple of years ago. And we have a workshop that starts at 7 o'clock and runs for somewhere around an hour, and it's free, and it's open to everybody. Usually we run off of prompts. And then at 8 o'clock we have the featured reader or readers. And then we take a break. We have coffee and cookies, chat a while, and then we have an open reading. So it's a pretty nice program.
Nice. And I see for this month, November 13th, we got Julie Maloney and Jeff Maschi.
Yes, Julie Maloney and Jeff Maschi are both reading. Two excellent poets, and Jeff is also a short story writer and an actor. And Julie runs a wonderful workshop of her own, and she's a very good writer. I think she sometimes does it in Greece, and I'm not exactly sure of the name of her workshop, so I don't want to say the wrong name, but you can find her on Facebook, and I'm sure you could find out all about her the workshop that she does. Hello? Hello?
I got lost for a second there.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, nothing. Oh. You don't have to be sorry about anything. My phone just cut out. So, but all right. So I'm sorry. You were talking about the two poets who are going to be featuring.
Oh, Jeff Mashey. I don't know. I was talking. I don't know if you heard that I was mentioning that Julie does a really great workshop that she runs. Sometimes she does it in Greece. And I don't really know the name of it. I've forgotten. I should have had it written down. But if you go on Facebook and you look up Julie Maloney, I'm sure you could find out information about her workshop. Or even if you just Google her, she's been doing it for years. She's a wonderful poet. And Jeff Mashey, I don't know, did you hear about Jeff Mashey? He's an actor, and he's also a short story writer. So he's really interesting and also a poet, of course. And so I think it'll be a great reading.
Nice. So Julie's going to do the workshop that night?
I didn't get a definite from either one yet, so that'll be up in the air. But someone will be doing it, either Julie or Jeff. So either one of them would be wonderful.
That'll be great.
That'd
be a good one.
That's okay. I was just going to say that in December, usually we just have an open reading. So it's always the second Wednesday. So we'll be having it open, and then we have like a holiday celebration, just cookies and what have you. So if anybody wants to stop by for that, it's a nice night.
Nice. Yeah, unfortunately, Wednesday nights I've been busy. After they will make it up, but hopefully I'll be able to make that December one.
That'd be great.
But yeah, Yeah, Baron Arts is a great venue to read in. And if you're looking to feature somewhere, the best way to go about that is to show up, read at the open mic, show off your stuff, and then, you know, they're more likely than to ask you to be featured in the upcoming months.
Absolutely. You've read for us, Mark. I love your work. So, and you'll have to come back and read for us again, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. I just got into a wave of new writing, so I got a whole bunch of new pieces to kind of get out there. So.
Oh, excellent. That's great. And I hear the new idiom is out as well. So.
Yeah, I was reading some selections from that, so that'll be available online soon. As a curator for an event, I was going to ask you, what do you think is the hardest part about organizing it and getting it together and things like that?
For me, the hardest part is because I have to submit the list of readers to the people who run the Baron Arts Center. And sometimes it's difficult because I have to give the names sometimes for a whole year in advance. And they're wonderful people, by the way. They give me a lot of support and financial support as well. I don't know how many programs have money to pay poets, but I know a lot don't. And I'm very fortunate that Cynthia Knight and the mayor of Woodbridge and, you know, the board of the Baron Arts Center are very generous to Poets Wednesday and the programs that we put out. So I do have a budget to work with, but that means that I do have to submit a list. And sometimes it just it keeps you confined as to being spontaneous. You can't really do that. If you see somebody you really love at an open reading somewhere or they're featuring somewhere and you want to say, hey, could you read for me in 2 months? You can't really do that because I'm sort of booked now until January of 15. So it's a little bit difficult to say, could you read for me in a little bit over a year, you know? People's schedules are, you know, not...
I don't know what I'm doing in 2015.
Exactly. So that's the only bad part about that. But everything else, you know, as far as for me, it's really wonderful. I love meeting new people. I love hearing new voices. We welcome musicians to come. You know, anything goes at the Baron Arts Center at Poets Wednesday. We like to hear all different kinds of things. So, and the more the merrier, of course. As Joe Weil used to say when he was running it, that he liked to have sort of like a wedding reception type of open reading where there's everybody from your grandmother to your young niece and everybody in between sharing poetry, and that's really nice.
Nice. We'll have to set that up. We'll all get our tuxes and our dresses, and we'll do a wedding reception poetry reading.
That sounds good to me. Yes, yes.
How about any upcoming project with Deborah Laveglia, the poet? We've been talking about what you do there, but what about your own poetry?
I actually have a reading coming up this month. It's at the Somerset Poetry Group, which runs out of the Bridgewater Public Library. And Bob Rosenblum is the director of that series. So I'll be reading with Deborah Gerrish. She has a new book out, and it should be a fun night. It's on October 23rd, and it starts at 7 p.m. It's free. And then they have an open reading afterwards. So it's a very nice program.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I've been to a few of his events. It's pretty good. It's almost like a roundtable discussion how they have it. I think that's how they still do it.
Absolutely. And what's really nice as a featured reader, and they do it also to all the open readers, but as a featured reader, you get to hear people talking about your work, and you're in on the conversation, and it's very interesting. I like it that he does it that way.
Yeah, nice.
And I'm also reading, but this is a long way off. It's in April for River Read at the Red Bank Public Library. So I think that's on a Sunday or a Saturday. I can't remember. But it's way off in April, and I'm sure you could Google the Red Bank Public Library and check that out. They also have a monthly series, and as you know, right, because I think John used to run the series.
Yeah, John Petrolino used to be in charge. I think it's Dan Barone now.
I'm sorry?
Or Greg Glory now.
Yeah, Greg Brown, he does it with Linda. I think her last name is Muehlhausen, and they do it together. They do a great job. It's really nice.
Yeah, yeah. Nice, nice.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, it sounds good. So definitely... there, go check out the Barron Arts Center readings. They're always a good time, and you get free cookies, you get free coffee. Can't beat that at a reading.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said. Hello?
Hello? Uh-oh. Did I get lost again?
I'm here. I hear you. I hear you now, yes. There we go.
All right. Yeah, I was just talking about how you get free cookies and coffee at the Barron Arts, so.
Yes, we have free cookies and coffee and popcorn. So, yes, everyone, please come and, join us for some snacks and some great poetry, definitely.
Nice, nice. All right, well, it was good talking with you, and, good getting these shout-outs out. And, we'll be around. I'll try and make it out to the next Barron Arts.
Oh, it'd be great to see you and to hear your work. And thank you so much for inviting me to do this. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Okay. Take care, Mark.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Nice. Oh, man. I hope my phone's just got to stay in for two more callers. That's all I need it to work for. Up next, we got Keith Baird, a fellow publisher of Scattery House Publications, coming on the air. He's going to talk about his half of the book with Ink, and we'll get a little bit out of him. Oh, he just messaged me on Facebook. He's going to go pee first, so he'll be back in a minute. we'll hear from Keith Baird, and then we got Jen and Damon coming on and finishing up the show later on. We'll talk to them, and hopefully this phone stays intact. But we'll see what happens. Went out there a little bit with Deborah. But, man, this Blog Talk Radio thing is awesome. I got disconnected. It just had to call up again. I said I wanted to continue, and it kept going. So definitely, if you're looking to start a podcast, Blog Talk Radio, a live podcast, Blog Talk Radio is pretty nice. Pretty easy to use. This is my first time doing it. So I'm going to read another piece from the current issue of the Idiom. And definitely check out the Idiom blog. Let me see where that is. I don't know the website offhand. Idiommag.wordpress.com. And you can find links to all of our social media sites on the idiommag.com. But with our blog, what I do is
probably about like once or twice a week or every other week or so, I'll talk about one of the pieces that's in the current issue of the Idiom, and I'll really analyze it and say exactly why I chose it, and it's a pretty cool thing, so definitely check out our blog. So I'll read this piece and then we'll have Keith there. And, so this one's by Christopher Mulrooney. It's called Bango's Crows. The symbolism is expressed in the brushwork of a few seconds, etc. A flick of the wrist and it's done, not the dull cowboys at the bright supermarket signifying where the posse is laid ambush for, in Yuma territory or thereabouts, or the girlish echoes of a ghost town in the west, entirely imaginary birds of night closing in on the day at the start. That was Van Gogh's Crows by Christopher Mulrooney, the current issue of the Idiom. And now we have Keith Baird on the phone. Hello.
Hello, Mark Brunetti.
Hello, Keith Baird. I think this is our first time ever talking together. I mean, I've never met you before.
Yeah, no, I mean, we came out of the same womb, you know, several years apart. But since then, we haven't seen each other or anything.
Yeah, in quite a while.
Yeah, it's nice. How you been doing?
I've been doing all right.
All right.
So you got the other half of the dual book coming out. We talked to Ink earlier tonight. Let me tell you something about your book, Keith. I was checking my email today, and I got an email from the Dodge Poets, and the subject of it was, "Before I Die, I Want To," and then ellipses. And at first I was like, are the Dodge Poets talking about my brother's book that's coming out in like a month or two? Because that's the title of your book is Before I Die, I Want to Swim with Sharks. But they were just sharing a writing prompt. That would be amazing. But they were just sharing a writing prompt. Before I Die, I Want To. And then it was like,
I think swimming with sharks would, I think that would be a good one to at least open with for that discussion.
Yeah. So I was amazed. I was like, oh, man, Keith got his book on Dodge Poets somehow. That's a group in New Jersey for anyone outside of the state here who doesn't know them. But I know you have the proof in front of you of this book. How about if you read that title poem for the audience?
Yeah, sure. Slight digression. I'll read that in a sec. But I was listening to you and Ink talking before, and he had a little slip of he accidentally called it When I Die, I Want to Swim with Sharks. And I don't know, I kind of like that. That was a nice little slip up. Thought, oh, I should have called it that.
Yeah, it is a nice little change. It's weird how that one word changes that whole title. Like, when I die, I want to swim sharks. To before I die.
Before I die, it's like anticipating, like, oh, I got so much to do before I go. And then when I die, even though it's terrifying to die by sharks, it's almost peaceful. It's like, no, I'm already dead. Now I want to swim with sharks.
But, me and Keith are really good at analyzing poems and poetry. Definitely check out the Idiom podcast. Me and Keith are the hosts of it. And people who submit their poems to us, we will discuss them, say what we like, what we don't like, and we'll get into close details kind of like that, so.
We could spend at least 2 hours arguing about the difference between the article the and the article as in the difference between a god and the god.
Yes, and the effect it has on the poem and things like that.
Ah, yeah. People just look at us like, it's a word. What the hell are you guys talking about? But, okay, let's read some poetry, shall we? Before I die, I want to swim with sharks. Of course she meant in one of those diver cages where the sharks can only glare sideways, like a Weight Watchers consumer glaring into a bakery with black hollow eyes that need their promises to be broken for one single meal. Can't break your diet, though, doctor's orders. Your hearts are in bad enough condition. You stop moving and that's the end. Nah, no red meat needed with that hanging over your dorsal fins. Yet they continue to stare, hoping to resurrect some ancestral megalodonian strength to manhandle the thick bars of the cage to get to the soft, chewy center. you can see evolution in its most sincerest form as you witness the same frenzy a little kid has ripping a cereal box apart to get to the prize inside. Before I die, I want to swim with sharks.
Nice, nice. Maybe you want to talk a little about where the stone came from?
Well, that, like a lot of poetry I write, came from a relationship. Really the most basic premise of that came from an ex-girlfriend who was really into wanting to go to see specifically the sharks in the Camden Aquarium. They had the tubes, the underwater tubes where you can walk through and actually walk through see-through tubes and see sharks swimming all around you. And that was kind of like one of the things. I think she may have literally like kind of said the line. Also, she was really interested in wanting to do one of those, actually be in like one of those cages where they throw you in the ocean, you know, like Richard Dreyfuss a la Jaws, hopefully not getting eaten though. And I think she might have literally said, you know, before I die, I want to do that. And I just thought, it's an interesting, you know, little line. You know, like most poetry, it's one line that really kickstarts it. So when you think of that line, before I die, I want to swim with sharks. Like, you know, we just said before I read the poem, that line itself has quite a bit of meaning in it. And then the rest of the poem just kind of spurts forth.
Came naturally.
Right.
Nice. So Keith is also one of the editors for the Scatterhouse Publications book, the haiku book that we created. And he's not only one of the editors, one of the writers for it. Tell us a little bit about that book. I mentioned it briefly before, but...
The origins of that was mostly the brainchild of Jason Portizo, poet, musician, / music studio, recorder, producer, down in Toms River, New Jersey. He did quite a few haiku, and he did a lot of haiku death matches, which were pretty much just two people going head-to-head, mostly at the Annex. You had mentioned the Annex as a place where we used to read poetry, and just throwing insultive haiku at each other, also called meme-ku, also called fuck-ku. And I was doing a lot of haiku because, you know, as a poetry reading, the only thing open at like 2-3 o'clock in the morning is your nearest Jersey diner. So I'd spend countless nights flipping over diner placemats. And, you know, after about 5-6 cups of coffee, the quickest thing you could write on caffeine is 17 syllable poems. So he knew I was big into haiku. And he came up to me and said, hey, you know, I do the fuck-ku. You write a lot of diner haikus, as we kind of coined it, what I do, you know, let's write a haiku book. And from there, we just kind of got a bunch of people, you know, who were also interested in doing it. And, the book has me, Jay Portizo, Inc., who you had on earlier, and three other poets. Dogmatic, who is a, you know, artist who goes around painting live paintings at shows. Heidi Moon. And Anthony DeFabritis of Accidental Seabirds.
Nice. You can get that book through the idiommag.com through our website. And what else? Yeah, you want to read some haiku from it?
I could read a couple of things from there. Let's see.
Some haiku out there.
Yeah. I'll do three of them. All night diners, best transition from yesterday into tomorrow. Haiku number two. My favorite part of dancing is accidentally bumping into you. Actually, I'll do two more. Haiku number three. I love how your sun resembles my moon when it's lost behind storm clouds. Finally, haiku number four. Sold my soul to the devil for $1.50. Poor bastard got gypped.
Nice, nice. Now, as far as the Idiot magazine goes, you are also in charge of the Diner Haiku section. So if anybody out there is a writer of the haiku, definitely send it to theidiotmag@gmail.com, and we'll put you in an issue. We'll make it up with you in it. So.
Yeah, and I'm totally anal about my own haikus being 17 syllables, not so much with others. You know, if you have an interesting haiku that doesn't, as long as it's a good haiku, yeah, we'll put it in there.
Nice, nice. So, yeah, we're thinking your book might come out by December. And actually, that'll remind me, I know you're going to come down on Wednesday, so maybe bring that book down if you can. And we'll go through the final edits for it.
Yeah, I think I could do that. I didn't have too much time to work on because I was on a little trip last weekend. But, yeah, I know you said if not by this weekend, maybe by next weekend, the latest. Yeah, I'll be working on it throughout the rest of the week, and hopefully we can get the next and last proof copy done.
Nice, nice. All right, yeah, you want to read one last piece, and then we'll be done with it.
Yeah, I think I could do that. Let's see what we got here. How about I do... This one's kind of inspired by you, actually, a little bit. If I could read that. It's titled, You Write Too Many Depressing Poems. My brother tells me when I show him another poem I wrote about my ex. I shrug and ask him what he thinks of it. I always ask my brother what he thinks of my poems and my girlfriend. It's good, he tells me. You might want to drop these lines about the new boyfriend. They don't really go with the rest of the poem. I don't always take my brother's advice with poetry or girlfriends, but I do consider it. He's 3 years older than me, which isn't really old enough to give sage advice, more like a 10-day weather forecast. She's cool, my brother told me. You guys seem really good together. You should bring her out to some readings. I look at the rest of the poem, nitpicking at some grammar, and delete the lines. Okay, maybe he was right this time.
This time.
Yeah.
All right, nice, nice. All right, well, yeah, thanks for coming on the radio show, and if I do this in a few weeks again, we'll probably have you on again.
Yeah, no, I'd definitely be down for doing this. This was fun.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, it was a good time. And me and Keith do the Idiom podcast together. Maybe we'll look into this Blog Talk Radio thing, and maybe we'll make the podcast a live thing, and do it off of there, and we'll have guest speakers and things like that. I don't know. Figure it out.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Have a big guy there live, read his poetry, and then see if people call in with their own opinions kind of deal.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. We'll figure it out. I'll look into it. So.
Nice.
That's behind the scenes. We can't talk about it here.
That's true. No one else can know the secrets of how the... Not quite, but... We rise below them.
Thanks, thanks. All right, so, yeah, I'll talk to you later, man. And
sounds good.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
No problem, man.
I will talk to you later.
Night.
Nice. So that was an interview with Keith. And up next, we have Cole, Ted, and Damon, a power couple from the Central Jersey area. Song they're called. But Jen did not only the recent issue of the Idiot magazine cover, I'm very thankful because I haven't been getting covers lately. She did, I think, the last two or three. About a year ago, she sent me two or three pictures, and I've just been using them. But we got some different people coming up for the covers in the future, but she did the current one, which is a very interactive cover, a paper doll type scene to cut things out. Let me get them on the line and we'll talk to them. Hello, Jen and Damon.
Hi. Hello.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Wonderful, thank you. We're just getting ready to go to bed.
Oh, nice, nice. So I got you at that
now
delirious
we're getting ready
state.
To go to the diner.
Oh, nice. Which Jersey diner are you guys going to?
We might be going to the Tom's River diner.
Oh, nice. That's definitely a classic one there. Yeah, you guys, tell us what you've been doing lately. Hasn't been playing, so let's hear about some of your upcoming projects. I think I see something. Are you guys making a movie?
And from Elevator Art anyway, our drummer Joe Lascola, he's an amazing filmographer and director and special effects artist. And if this is the movie you're speaking of anyway, he's doing another short movie that's coming out. It's going to be awesome. It's called Field of Screams, and they're in the middle of working on that as we speak.
Nice. Yeah, I've seen some pictures up online of you guys. I think there were zombies and things like that, or at least some bloody people.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. These guys put Spectrum Video. They put so much work into what they do. It's impressive, actually. But speaking of videos, from what I understand, our buddy Chris Rockwell is coming out with his music video tomorrow night for Let's Get Free or Die, and Jennifer and I should be in it.
It's called Back to Babylon, but Damon and I are kind of, like, slow to catch up with some of these, like, trendy things, so I guess people promote with, like, hashtags now.
Yeah.
I guess it's hashtag Let's Get Free or Die, but the video is for Back to Babylon.
Nice. Yeah, he's having a release party tomorrow night, right? Do we know where that is?
Yeah, I think that it's not, I'm not entirely sure if it's at a location, but I know that the video link will be up on the Facebook event page, which I actually posted on my Facebook wall if anybody wanted to look that up. I'm Jenny Mustaches on Facebook, but, it's facebook.com/events/allthesecrazynumbers.
Nice. Yeah, so we'll be looking for that tomorrow night, that video. How about your blog, Jenny? I know sometimes you post up on there and you'll have some good things to say.
Yeah, actually, I love blogging, and I definitely would like to make a transition away from Facebook and more towards that, because I find that I reach, like, a wider audience, as strange as that is. Like, people all over the world pretty much look at blogs, and I just feel that it's got more of, like, a visual language that I'm interested in, and it promotes, like, to me, I like to promote local businesses, local artists and musicians, and, like, that's really my goal with the blog. And with Facebook, it only goes so far. I'm, like, promoting to the same people, so I'm finding that I'm really reaching my goal with the blog instead, and I pretty much promote anyone and everything that I really like, and if I kind of get a sense that something has a luster, then I'm going to want to promote that and get people to enjoy it as well.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, and blogs are a little bit more intimate, you know, like, you could say more and express yourself better, and then if people are following your blog, it's because they want to follow what you're saying. It's not just they're a follower on Facebook or Twitter, where it just kind of almost gets bypassed sometimes.
Yeah, and I think there's a huge responsibility with that. Like, sometimes, like, there's a couple blogs that I follow, and if I do find an entry that's, like, more personal, I actually don't like that, because I feel like I don't want to know about the writer so much to the point where it's, like, losing the message about what I liked about this person's interests, not so much about, like, you know, I don't know, their relationship status or something. So in a sense, like, it's a little disconnected in that way, and you're still, like, part of a community somehow. So if anyone did want to check it out, my site is myhearthasamouth.blogspot.com, and I update that 2 to 3 times a week with just different things that I feel are either important or just, you know, aspects of my life. And considering that Damon and I are both part of a musical and artistic community in New Jersey, you know, I kind of come from different perspectives, being that I lived in both South and North Jersey for such a long time. I was going back and forth on the Parkway all the time, so. Yeah.
Nice. Any future projects that the two of you are coming out with as far as music-wise or art-wise or anything?
Well, you know what, unfortunately, since the breakup of Elevator Art, we've just been kind of experimenting more with music in a different avenue, getting more just experimental. I guess that's the best word I can come up with. We're trying all kinds of different technology and just challenging ourselves, the two of us. And it's a lot more work to make it sound full for the two of us, but it's actually starting to make some sense. And you start to kind of create a style through the challenge, just of what the two of us are capable of. So, you know, the two of us, we call ourselves Bow and Arrow, mainly because Jennifer created that analogy for our relationship. I became quite fond of that, in that I was the bow, in that I was a structure, a sturdy foundation, and that she was the arrow. She was the energy that traveled, and together we kind of always hit our target. And that always made sense since the day we met. So the music kind of works off that same premise. And we have a song out now that's on the internet called Somewhere Together. And it was a quick little ditty that we wrote for our wedding back in June. And our good friends from Sunlab Studios recorded it for us with solar panels using just the sun out in the middle of the woods. And that's on YouTube if you want to look up Somewhere Together by Bow and Arrow.
Yeah, that's actually on my blog, too, if you just don't know where to find that. But the reason why we recorded it was that people give out, like, wedding favors, and Damon and I felt that it was silly to spend money on something that people were just going to not care about. So we ended up writing a song instead, and then we gave people CDs. So that's what we did.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's so much more intimate than just a wedding favor, you know, like a little thing of flowers or something. So.
Yeah,
exactly.
Nice.
So we've been busy with just experimenting with music, and a few people have asked us if we would like to debut or perform some of this music. So we have a few dates that we were invited to perform at. November 13th and 14th, we're going to be in Asbury Park. We were just invited yesterday to perform at a show that's in the works for January 4th at the Co-Works for a very dear friend of ours, Richie Brown. He's an amazing artist. If you don't know who Richie Brown is, please get yourself in tune. He's really what's happening right now, I think.
Where are you going to be in Asbury Park on those dates?
On January 4th, it's going to be at the Co-Works. It's where the new Bands on a Budget building is.
On November 13th, we're playing with Moon Motel at the Saint, and I'm personally really excited to play at the Saint. I like playing there, and I think a lot of great bands start there, and I just like going back to, in my eyes, like back to my roots. Like, it's cool for me to play at the Saint. And then on the 14th, so Thursday, we're playing for Joshua Ballard's Thursday night gig at the Yacht Club.
Oh, nice. Yeah, just talk to him about that. Yeah, that Sound Station gig. So.
Yes. It's going to be interesting. We haven't had the opportunity to show anybody the music we've been working on, so it'll be something to see, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll have to come check that out. Definitely want to see your new project. How's it been doing that transition? I mean, Elevator Art, how many members? There were 6 members, I believe, and now it sounds doing this 2 thing. So you've been talking about experimenting and doing this new form of making music. What's that kind of been like?
Well, you know, having a lot of people in a group isn't always limitless. Sometimes it's a little bit limiting, but at least as a songwriter, I found myself writing songs for that particular style of music when I was in Elevator Art. It was mostly performance quality. Now, being a two-person duo here, it's not so much about performance quality. Now it's just about filling that sound and making it sound intimate enough for the two of us to enjoy it. But, you know, the audience thing comes into play later.
Like, to me, it's fun to fill the different roles. You know, like, you're sort of subscribed to a role when you're in a group with a lot of people. I mean, even if you're moving around, you know, it has to be kind of choreographed. And in a sense, like, Damon and I are really fluid about what we want to do. Like, I do play bass for some of the songs, but I don't have to. We can do different things and just sort of experiment. And I think that experimenting leads to more creativity and a little more, I don't know, I guess, like, intimacy.
And I really enjoy that aspect of it. But not only that, writing songs just for Jennifer and I has been a little bit expanding for me as a songwriter, because when I was in elevator art, it was social topics and, you know, social commentaries and things of that nature. But with the Bow and Arrow project, I find myself channeling a lot of my love song type nostalgia into lyrics and into the music. So a lot of the songs are primarily love songs. I get an opportunity to just get them out of my system. And the two of us have been really working hard on them to make them work. So it's a nice transition, to answer your question, because you get a little bit of this with a large group, and then you get a little bit of that with just the two of us. It's good to explore every avenue as a musician and to challenge yourself. If you really want to be good at what you do, always challenge yourself.
Nice, nice. What instruments do you guys play in Bow and Arrow? Do you kind of switch it up, or?
At the moment, it's mostly digital sampling and electric acoustic guitars, bass guitars, lots of beautiful harmonies thanks to the talented Jennifer Santamaria. And
I play the Chaos Elator. I'm really excited about this thing. Like, I'm really upset I haven't played it prior to this past month. But it's like a box that you move your finger around on, and you can change the tones, you can make rhythms with it. Like, it's also really interactive, and anybody can do it. So it's the kind of thing that if somebody wanted to play it, we could, like, make something off of it, like, play something featuring someone else's, like, you know, collaboration. So
yeah, the live performance with the two of us has to be bigger than just two people, because we feel that it's just been, not that there's anything wrong with it, but the two people thing, or just the man with the acoustic guitar on stage, has been done so many times that it'd be nice to do something a little more interesting, and we know we're capable of it. So we have a loop station where we can record things that we can just press a button and it'll play live for us, kind of like setting up your song before you go out and perform it. And that's given us a lot of room to work, too. So you're going to hear flutes even when there isn't a flute being played, or you might even hear the piano when there's no piano being played, or the mandolin for that matter.
Nice, nice. Cool. So we got those dates. Any other events coming up, or anything else you want to mention?
Well, I have a hard time pronouncing his name, but Anthony D. Celebritas. He is coming out with a poetry book next year, and I did the illustrations for it. So I wanted to promote that for 2014. He came to me and had me work on it, primarily because he wanted to get really, like, fluid and sort of unconscious, like, automatic drawing. And I really enjoy working on that project, because I do a lot of, like, loose, blind, contour-type artwork, and I think that goes really well with his poetry. And then lastly, I plan on making more covers for the Idiom and for Thief Coos. So whenever you guys are ready for that, just let me know.
Oh, nice. Yeah, definitely send them on by. How about you, Damon? Any projects coming up? Or?
Yeah, I don't know. Have you heard of Monkey Can't Sleep?
No, what's that?
Monkey Can't Sleep is a children's book that I released earlier this year, and it people seem to really enjoy it, so I decided to start working on another children's book, and I'm not going to reveal the name of it yet. I'll just give you a clue that it is about an alligator. And the artwork, I've been working on the artwork now for the past 2 weeks in the storyline, and it's going to be another nighttime children's book that a parent would read to their child. And I should have it done by, if not by Thanksgiving, then definitely by Christmas. So if you go to monkeycantsleep.com, you can see the Monkey Can't Sleep book. But in the meantime, keep your eyes peeled. I'll have the alligator book out soon, too.
Nice, nice. All right. Well, it was a pleasure talking with you guys. Well, what is that? That's the warning me about 90 seconds left. I don't know if you guys heard that.
That's fine. Thank you so much for having us.
No problem. And, yeah, I'll see you at an upcoming show or something like that, and we'll be around.
We'll be around, too.
You'll see us. Thanks, man.
All right. I'll see you later. Yeah.
Thanks. Oh, 60 seconds, the countdown's beginning, it's telling me. So that was a real pleasure talking with Jen, Damon, Keith Baird, Deborah Laveglia, Josh Ballard, and Inc. Hope you enjoyed. I don't know if I'm going to sub again next week for Bud Smith, but we'll discuss it, and maybe I'll be back on with a whole other crew of people that be able to hear about their projects and things like that. I don't know. I had a great time. Listen back. If you're local to Jersey, definitely come out and see some of our events that are going on. Check out all the websites you mentioned. And, yeah, I'll sign out now, and I'll talk to you guys later.